You know, I have preached here regularly now for 18 years. And I hope there are just many more years to come. Over the course of the 18 years, I kind of dug a little this week and realized that I have preached on this passage that we're going to look at today out of Philippians. This will be my third time. And so you can test your memory if you have been here over the years to see if you remember any of this. And but I think that this time around I have a different perspective on it than I think that I ever did. We started studying the second chapter of Philippians 7 weeks ago, and we're going to wrap it up here week after next. But we get to a particular passage today, but I want to set the stage for it. 2 weeks ago, we looked at this part of the second chapter. This is what we studied. Therefore, my dear friends, as you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. So this working out your salvation, it's kind of a strange statement. We studied kind of all the way through it. But as I've been reading through the rest of this letter, the question came to me was, what would you, if this was all that you saw of the letter, and the rest of the letter was laying there for you to look at, what would you imagine Paul's instruction would be following this? What do you think the first command would be after he said, now, all of you, you need to be busy, all of us need to be busy working out our salvation with fear and trembling? I mean, that is a serious statement talking about a serious topic. You know, salvation is no little deal, as we've looked at the past few weeks. What do you think the first command would be? It's really interesting because, you know, to me it's like surprising that this is where he goes, right after saying something so grand and so magnificent as work out your salvation. This is what he says. Do everything without grumbling or arguing, so that you may become blameless and pure, children of God without fault, in a warped and crooked generation. Really? That's where he's going to go? Right after work out your salvation with fear and trembling, stop griping. Stop complaining. Stop arguing with each other. That's where he went. Of all things. And honestly, you know, for him to go to griping and arguing, to me it just seems odd. Of all of the other things that he could have gone to, since most of us moderns who are reading this letter 2,000 years after it was written, we are reading it in a Western world, in a Western mindset. This was written to a group of new believers in the Mediterranean 2,000 years ago. It seems odd to me. But for them, it made perfect sense. Made perfect sense, because what Paul is doing right here is that he's making an allusion or a connection to the great wilderness story of the Jews. That's what he's starting to talk about. And the grumbling of the Israelites. Paul's talking here about a story that had been passed on from generation to generation to generation for literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, passed down by the Jews. It's a story that was revealed in the Old Testament Hebrew scriptures. The same scriptures that Paul would have used 2,000 years ago to establish and proclaim that Jesus, this Jewish fellow, who claim to be God, the same scriptures that declared that He was the promised Messiah of the Jews. Even the non-Jews that He is writing to, which that was Paul's primary audience, they would have got this. They would have understood. Paul's starting to connect this to some other great narrative. For any of you that grew up going to church, for any of you that spent time in children's church or children's Sunday school or wherever, I'm telling you, you got this story. This is like one of the greatest of all stories that we are brought up with in the church. It's called the wilderness story. After years and years and years of being in captivity in Egypt, the Israelites escaped. They escaped their enslavement. God told them to do it. He prepared a way for them to do it. And He told them, you are to now go to the promised land. That's what you have to do. And as the story unfolds, it unfolds in a couple of different books of the Bible in the Old Testament. But we read the story that, you know, Moses was their leader. He led them out of Egypt. And under his leadership, what did the Israelites do on a daily basis? Did any of you remember the story? They complained and argued. That was their daily job. That's what they did. They complained and grumbled and argued. They disputed the command that we are to leave Egypt and go to the promised land, and nobody even knew where it was. And it's pretty interesting because we know that that journey lasted 40 years. And I'm telling you, that is a lot of moaning and griping. And it happened every day. Every day. They would complain, we want to go back to Egypt. It was better there. Sure, we were slaves, but at least we got good food. Look what we get now. We get these little bread pellets that drop out of the air, and we have to pick them up off the dirt. And we only get enough for one day at a time anyway. They would go, well, let's camp here. Why are we camping there? We don't want to be there. Moses! Sound like children. That's why they're called the children of Israel. I picture the daily conversation, you know, being a dad and a grandpa, I picture the daily conversation going like this. Moses! How much longer till we get there? See, you know, every parent gets it. Can you imagine millions saying the same thing at you as the leader? I don't want to drive that car. Israel, the children of Israel, the people of God, in this story, they grumbled in the wilderness. That's what they did. The word that we see here, do everything without grumbling. It's a great word. The history or the etymology of the word says this kind of grumbling is more like the under your breath complaining that we are also good at. We get it. It's an utterance made. It is how the dictionary defined it: an utterance made in a low tone of voice. Okay, so parents, you know what that is. That's what you hear, and you turn around to your kid and you go, "What did you say?" And they say, "Nothing." That's the kind of grumbling that he's talking about, and he's saying, "Stop it! You guys need to stop that." Stop that kind of behavior. Stop the whispers. Stop the small talk. Stop the talking behind people's backs that is never, ever positive. Stop criticizing and protesting and whining and belly aching. Really, that's the first command after he says, work out your salvation with fear and trembling? I just find it odd. I just find that there's something more here to this. I'm guessing We are all natural grumblers. Do you think? Every one of us. It also says that we are to knock off the arguing and the disputing. In the New Testament, the word disputing, let's put it this way, the disputing doesn't mean like the free exchange of rational ideas. You know, to work towards a mutually beneficial conclusion to the discussion. It means quarreling, arguing, dissenting, fighting. The word itself that is used here has an element to it that means, and it's usually heated. Usually heated. And Paul says, here, you want to begin working out your salvation with fear and trembling? Knock off these two things. This is where we start. You know, if we go back to the story of the Israelites wandering in the desert for their 40 years, Moses wrote an interesting thing when he recounted this whole story years afterwards. In Deuteronomy 32, and this is where the connection comes from, he's talking about God, and he says, God is the rock, His works are perfect, and all His ways are just. A faithful God who does no wrong, upright and just is He. They, and he's talking about the grumbling Israelites, they are corrupt and not His children. To their shame, they are a warped and crooked generation. Does that look familiar? They're a warped and crooked generation. Go back, Larry. Let's look at it again. Do everything without grumbling and arguing, so that you may become blameless and pure, children of God without fault in a warped and crooked generation. You see, Paul knew exactly what he was talking about. He was connecting it to something in the history of God's people. And what about us? What about us? Where does this leave us? Where does it leave us personally? Let's go to the next slide, Larry. It says, then you will shine among them. Like when you stop grumbling and complaining, then you will shine among them like stars in the sky as you hold firmly to the word of life. And then I will be able to boast on that day of Christ that I didn't run in labor or in vain. How are we to be different in a warped and crooked generation? How do we stand out? How do we, as God's people, the children of God now, how do we become blameless and pure and without fault? Wow. Stop complaining. Stop arguing. Is it really that simple? What are we supposed to stop arguing and stop complaining about? You ready for this one? Everything. All of it. Every bit of it. Remember what started this whole discussion? You who have been here for the entire study, we actually started our study of the second chapter of Philippians at the end of chapter 1. The end of chapter 1, verse 1:27, Paul writes, remember this? Whatever happens, conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ. Whatever happens in your life, no matter what, act in a way that is befitting of the story of Jesus. That's our option. There really aren't any other options. Conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the story of Jesus that has given us new life. Man. We live today, there's no doubt. We live in a warped and crooked generation, don't you think? We live in a generation that has in many ways redefined right from wrong. We all feel that. So look, as followers of Jesus, our role, our voice in society, our voice in our community, our presence, our influence has been compromised. I think it definitely has. And so just like back in the first century, the instruction, I think, is exactly the same. What does Paul tell us to do as of first order, top of the list? Act like children of God in a warped and crooked generation. There's not a plan B here. Do you want to become lights in a dark world? Be different. Don't grumble or complain. Don't argue. Get along. Care for each other. Hold on to each other. Look, this is crazy talk, if you ask me. You know, we are in an era where we have actually been conned into believing that somehow we can legislate spirituality. That we can pass some law that will make people behave properly. That doesn't happen that way. And Paul knew it 2,000 years ago. So he says to them, and he says to us, here, you want to make a bold statement in the world that you live in? You want to make a bold statement to your children? Do you want to make a bold statement to your spouse or your boss or the people you lead? Here's where you start. Stop complaining and stop arguing. Wow. It just seems to me, when I look at it at face value, it's just crazy talk. But think about it. Just by removing complaining and arguing and replacing them with a humble spirit of thankfulness and contentment and peacemaking, that change will make all of the difference in the world, in your world, in your interaction with people. Look, earlier in this chapter, just a few verses earlier, and we've studied this a lot over the past number of weeks. Paul, he didn't just urge. I mean, he bold-faced told the Philippians. And indirectly, he is telling us, adopt the mindset and the attitude and the stance of Jesus. That is our life goal. That is the plan. That's what God is about. You know, somebody asks you, well, what's this whole religion thing about? This is it. It's wrapped up in the second chapter of Philippians, where Paul says, adopt this mindset in you. Take on the stance of Jesus, the one who gave up everything because of love. He gave up every position of power to be the one who loved all. And now Paul says in this letter, by this simple act of learning to become content and trusting God in everything, by not complaining and arguing, we will shine like stars to a warped and crooked generation. We will have this awesome privilege of being light in a world of darkness. Look, every one of us sitting here, Unless there is no blood running through your veins at all. We all want the world to be a better place. We all want something better for our children than what we are seeing. We all want there to be greater love and greater connection. We want peace in the world. Look, we do. We wouldn't be sitting in this building today if we didn't want that. We would be at some political rally somewhere if we wanted something else. But we are people that want to see change, not on the outside, but on the inside, so that it affects the world that we are living in. And Paul gives this simple command. Here's what you get to do. Here's what we get to do in this warped and crooked generation. We get the privilege of cutting out complaining and arguing. And somehow God is going to use that for great things. He will make us shine like lights in the wilderness. Look, I had the privilege that a lot of people never had by growing up where I grew up, is that I have had this incredible privilege of laying out overnight, multiple nights, absolutely by myself with nobody else around me at 12,000 feet in the High Sierras for days. It's part of what I used to do with my life when I could walk. Yeah. I'm going to tell you, there is absolutely, and some of you may have had the privilege of doing it, and actually something that is similar to 12,000 feet in the High Sierras is somewhere way out in West Texas in the prairie, where seeing the stars is totally unobstructed. And we've all had an experience with that before, where you're out there and there's no other light except for the light coming down from stars, and it will take your breath away. You know that? It absolutely takes your breath away. It is so cool. I was thinking about this as I was preparing this week, remembering that the coolest thing about being at 12,000 feet was being able to function in the middle of the night without a flashlight. I never even took it out. There was just enough light to see everything that I needed to see. It was so bright. Had no idea there were so many stars. And even though the stars may be thousands upon millions and billions and light years away, you can still see them shining brightly. I really think that's what Paul had in mind about what our lives can and should be like in the midst of a warped and crooked generation. We get to be lights in darkness. So I'm going to end with this. Bam can come up. How do we become lights? How do we stop complaining? Look, you may be sitting right next to somebody that you know better than anybody else in the world, and you're going, man, he complains all the time. Or you think about your kids going, where did we go wrong? All they do is complain and argue and bicker and so forth. Now, some of that's just developmental. But when it comes to being adults and growing up, how do you develop contentment? How do we get to a point in our life where we get up in the morning and say thank you for everything instead of all of the other things that we're whining about the moment that our feet hit the floor? How does that happen? How do we fall in love with peacemaking, where arguing and complaining and fighting is not our character, but actually being people who walk into situations and we bring calm into anywhere that we walk? How does that happen? How do we remain faithful to Christ in a warped and crooked generation? Well, I'll tell you this. After all of these years, I'm just going to tell you as your friend, this is not rocket science. It's not rocket science. Let's put that back up there, Larry. I want to look at it again. The last slide. Then you will shine among them like stars in the sky as you hold firmly to the word of life. He even gives an answer. We hold firmly to the word of life. Now I'm going to tell you, my understanding of this text, I don't think Paul is talking about holding on to the Bible. I don't think that's what he's talking about. You know, the words of life. You know, I've heard this passage preached dozens of times. They get to the end of it and go, "Now we need to start studying our Bible. We need to hold on to the Bible." As much as I love the Bible, I don't think that's what he's talking about, because the Bible didn't even fully come into being for hundreds of years after this. Now, could he have been prophetic about it? Maybe, I don't know. But I don't think that's it. Who's he been writing about? He's been writing about Jesus. He's saying, hold, as I read it, he's saying, hold firmly to Jesus. The one this entire chapter has been written about. The one who is known as the Word, the living Word. Jesus is known as the way and the truth and the life. In Jesus, we see everything that God had to say. Everything that is important that God had to say, we see it in the life of Jesus. He is the definitive answer to everything that matters. The perfect example of how and why we should live. That's who we hold firmly to. That's how this happens.